I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE. After a week of Russian advances against the UK-US EU-armed proxy Nazi-linked forces in Ukraine, that's Russia, as in the now most powerful economy in Europe by PPP, while in the USA, the longest government shutdown in its history threatened starvation of 42 million Americans. As Western European nations economically collapse, Hungary's PM Viktor Orban has in the past 24 hours been meeting Trump at the White House. He was lobbying to save Hungary from US neocon sanctions on Russian oil imports. After all, Trump had no problem with Chinese imports of Russian energy. The hastening defeat of NATO in Ukraine comes amidst days of Trump rhetoric, redolent of the war criminal Dick Cheney, who died this week after his wars destroyed the lives of tens of millions around the world. Trump officials have now signaled wars on Palestine, Venezuela, Colombia, Iran, Nigeria. Trump said guns are blazing, and, well, there may be more by the time you watch this. Joining me again from Rome is someone who once advised the EU's foreign policy, former British diplomat Alistair Crook, now director of the Conflicts Forum. Alistair, thanks so much for coming back on. I was going to start with asking you about Monday's meeting in the White House with the former commander of Al-Qaeda with Donald Trump. But just before we get to that, we saw earlier in the week Trump boost Seoul nuclear submarine ambitions. Then we, after headlines about that and his trip in APEC, Trump orders US to begin nuclear weapons testing. US president says it is appropriate to start testing again because others are doing so, playing very big in the Dubai press. And now we hear from Russia's Security Council that Defense Minister Andrei Belousov has proposed that Putin immediately begin preparations for nuclear testing in the Arctic archipelago Novaya Zemlya. How dangerous is all of this?
Well, first of all, it seems to be based on a misunderstanding. Allegedly, Trump has proposed the idea of nuclear tests in response to Russian nuclear tests. But there haven't been a Russian nuclear test, I think, since 92 or something like
that. Sorry to interrupt, Alistair, but yeah, that's, yeah, because it's 35 years ago. But John Ratcliffe, I don't know whether you ever met him on your travels, the head of the CIA, says absolutely Russia and China have been conducting covert tests.
Oh, well, I mean, there's no evidence. Anyway, but what it was, what I was going to say was the Burezhnik missile that was publicized this these recent days, like the Oreshnik, but this one has a nuclear power. It has got a propulsion system that is nuclear-based. Its warhead isn't. There isn't a nuclear warhead on it. I imagine it might be, but there isn't. It is a conventional warhead, but it is just, instead of having a rocket propulsion, it has a nuclear drive that propels it. And this is why it's able to stay up aloft for a very long time and to, in fact, traverse the whole globe. But it's nuclear propulsion, not nuclear weapon, if you understand. Did Trump understand that, or did he just think this was a new nuclear weapon that Russia was testing? He probably didn't understand that it wasn't. It was just its propulsion mechanism that is nuclear, but not its warhead. And so then he suggests these tests. I gather that the Americans have been rowing back on these and said, well, they won't be underground tests. We're not going to do big underground tests now. We're going to do something else. I saw a report that they were suggesting that they won't actually do underground tests. Now, whether the Russians have been testing underground before, I doubt it. I mean, who am I to contradict the tremendous resources of the CIA? But I'm sure they would have taken every opportunity to say it if they thought they had detected Russian or Chinese underground tests. And anyway, you can't hide that because it will be picked up on the seismic measuring equipment all around the world. And people will say, hey, what's happened? Is there an earthquake taking place in Russia or in China? And why has it suddenly gone up to these levels? So I'm sure they would have come out with it if they thought they had managed to catch Russia doing an underground test.
I think you were being sarcastic about John Ratcliffe and the CIA, because after all...
It's cold iron.
I mean...
It's cold iron.
It's that same agency in Virginia complaining about Venezuelan drugs, after all. Do you see that the Trump administration will be backing off from that? I mean, they have been conducting more or less daily extrajudicial murder of fishermen in the Caribbean over the past few days, seeming to no international response whatsoever. I mean, they seem to be able to do this. I mean, a few American politicians have been saying, actually, this is unconstitutional of Trump to be ordering this and of Hegseth to be carrying this out.
I think it's very characteristic, Trump's response, when people say, you know, what you're doing, is it constitutional? Is it legal? Is it appropriate to just kill people in boats? It's several now, several boats, and many people have been just vaporized in this way. And he just simply says the following three words: I have the power.
Or four. I mean, the media seems to be all up for it. Here's the FT. Venezuela's military unprepared for U.S. strikes. I'm not even sure the usefulness of a headline in the FT like that. I don't know what it's trying to suggest, whether it's trying to imitate Dick Cheney because he died this week and all these journalists loved him so much. What have you thought about the media setup this time around for any preparation for possible war on Venezuela, which would offend, obviously, the MAGA base?
I mean, that's a very important, the last point you mentioned. But, you know, Venezuela is a huge country. It's bigger than Ukraine. It's a large, very large country. And it has connections, you know. I for a period lived in Colombia. And, you know, it's quite likely that there are militia waiting to join in on the borders. What are they going to do? Decapitate the government? How? Bombing it or invading it or kidnapping it? I don't know. But when the FT says they're unprepared, this is just psyops to say, this is an easy war and we'll do this and we will take all that oil and gas and the natural resources and it'll be folded into the United States. I mean, what I think this is about is that the Trump team has made it very clear, in the sense of sort of very clear messages to those that are receiving, saying, all from the southernmost tip of Argentina to the Arctic, this is all going to be folded into the new U.S. Western Hemisphere sphere of interest. So all of this is part of that. But it's also part of the much more common, if you like, crisis that the United States is facing, which is a financial crisis. And all of this is, as you are, I'm sure, fully aware, that they've got a shadow banking system, which is now 50% of the credit, which is 50% of total credit given from America. Dwarfing almost the conventional, the regulated banking system. This is unregulated, is over leveraged. And as the economist from the BIS just said the other day, you know, this is half of the credit given out, and we haven't a clue what's going on there. In the regulated system, we've got an idea of what's going on in the banks, but in the shadow banking system, which is now half of the total, we don't have an idea what's going on there.
And if you add the quantitative easing over the past week, which then can be leveraged into that system, does that not necessitate wars? I mean, the United States has an economic necessity for wars, and that's why Trump, he didn't care that the MAGA base didn't like his $41 billion to Raytheon, $33 billion to Northrop, $34 billion to General Dynamics, $33 billion to Boeing. That was the big, beautiful bill. As you know, social programs for drug addicts in the inner cities of America were cut.
But what they really want, I mean, and what you're hinting at, is yes, they need collateral to underpin all of these liabilities on their bank accounts, their bank sheets, and so they've got to get. They need resources. They need the oil of Venezuela. They need the Arctic. They need the Middle Eastern resources. Partly just to reinforce, because when you get to the end of your leverage, you can't give more credit until you get more assets on your balance sheet. And so they want the assets of Venezuela and the Middle East on their balance sheets so they can lend more and therefore take more resources, buy and lend to countries that have resources, and then use those, if you like, for further expansion. Everything is about expansion. America thrives on expansion. And so all of this is connected by, you know, that America is getting, first of all, overwhelmed by its deficits and is getting anxious and very antsy about the fact that there are seem to be sort of problems in the credit markets, or in the shadow banking area, in things we've seen it by subprime auto loans now and other things. A number of companies gone bankrupt. So they don't know what's there. And so I think that's why they're trying to pull in money as fast as they can. And we have to see, and we'll see what the Supreme Court says about the whole principle of tariffs. The Supreme Court is due to consider that and to pronounce on whether these tariffs conform to the Constitution, because the Constitution says that the revenue raising in the United States is a prerogative of Congress, not of the president. The president contends he has the right to set tariffs on whom he wants, when he wants, as he wants, and for as long as he wants, under the one provision, which is the act of declaring an emergency. But the Emergency Act says nothing about tariffs. It just says that in the case of an emergency, special measures are permitted. So what the Supreme Court will do, it could even order the repayment of all those tariffs, which are about $90 billion, that have been raised mostly from America. It will be a major crisis. I think it, I mean, many of the legal people, I'm not a legal person at all, but the legal experts in America, many of them think that there's a good chance that the court will side against the president on tariffs and return the authority to Congress. You imagine then the geopolitical consequences to this. Because the whole of his geopolitical structure, framework, has been based on tariffs and using tariffs as a sort of weaponized forcing agent to get more money to shake down states in Southeast Asia or in Gulf states or anywhere he can to bring back and to, if you like, to try and, if you like, modify a little bit the deficit.
Alistair Crook, I'll stop you there. More from the former advisor on Middle East issues to EU foreign policy chief Javier Solana after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Alistair Crook, former British diplomat and founder and current director of Conflicts Forum. Alistair, at the end of part one, you were talking about the case that started on Wednesday at the Supreme Court about Trump tariffs. Great news for accountants, if what you say is right and your friends say is right, and that it's, they're going to have to unravel these tariffs against Trump's view that it is an emergency and the economy is in grave problems in the United States. You mentioned PSYOPs a little earlier in part one. You know, and where the Americans are going to get their money. The Sulzberger family's New York Times says, Ukraine gamifies the war. Well, it's been quite a week in Ukraine. I don't know what that headline again means. Something about a contest is motivating the Ukrainian army. I mean, the pathetic nature of these American newspapers is on full display, clearly. But couldn't the Americans just borrow it from or steal it from Western Europe, all the money they require desperately, rather than go into these wars? From Italy, where you are?
Wait. Western Europe doesn't have the money to go into these wars. And this is why they're in a state of some desperation, because they don't have the money. In fact, they, like France, the EU is stuck trying to pass a budget. And it's not clear yet what will, I mean, they'll have a budget at one point, but there's going to be a lot of infighting before that is agreed. They certainly don't have the resources to take on the whole of Ukraine. No, not at all. But it is a very dangerous situation because clearly Trump doesn't have the ability to normalize with Russia. He started the process. And I think we saw very clearly with the Hungary summit being proposed that he got a very clear message. No, you're not to normalize with Russia. We won't allow it. And so he had to back off from that because the forces behind him, the big donors, the mega donors that have given grant have helped him to the presidency. Some of them, I mean, those people like Addison, Sheldon Addison, now Miriam is in charge of it, his widow. But, I mean, he saved Trump in the 80s and 90s. The whole Trump empire was collapsing because of the Atlantic Trump casino was in financial difficulties. But the structure of his company meant that he would lose all his profits. And it was Sheldon Adelson who put together some like-minded pro-Israeli billionaires that saved him. So he owed everything, if you like, to that group of Israeli billionaires. They saved him, and he's been repaying them in kind ever since.
And, of course, for the economy at large, not just his own private finances, you're saying the European Union and Britain, they won't continue giving the money, because Trump does seem to indicate always the Ukraine proxy war is basically a money raiser for the US Treasury. That's what he keeps saying. But I understand, as you've been analyzing it in recent days, Trump has given up against all the pressure, the neocon pressure in his administration on a peace process with Russia. So we should just be expecting daily advances from Russia and I'm not sure from Western Europe. I mean, Meloni in Italy, where you are, is saying the most extraordinary things.
I mean, first of all, it was the money raiser for America simply because they sold all the weapons. And the military industrial complex made a lot of money from that. And Trump's idea was that Europe should buy all the weapons from American arms producers as well. So that, you know, there would be now Europe subsidizing the military-industrial complex. But Europe doesn't have the money for that. Really doesn't have the money for that. And Russia was very, very angry at what happened. It crossed red lines, Russian red lines. It's not the red line that everyone is assuming about the threat of the Tomahawks. But, I mean, first of all, at the meeting at Anchorage, the Russian understanding was that Trump would hold off sanctions to allow the next phase to proceed. And secondly, the next phase was no frozen conflict. The Russians are not going to walk into that trap. They've been there before. They're not going to do it again. And both those red lines were broken. And then there was the threat of the Tomahawk missile. And that's just been too much for the Russians. They've had it. No more talks. They're finished with this. They realize that Trump is not capable or doesn't want to or was not allowed to normalize with Russia. But they warn, if he starts firing Tomahawk missiles into the depths of Russia, there will be a completely different level of escalation by Russia. Consequence on that.
Of course.
They won't accept that.
Of course, I mean, The Russians have always said that, and they always still seem to accept one thing after another, arguably. But on the tariffs, one great thing about the tariffs, arguably, for BRICS countries, has been the ensuing catalyzed detente between India and China. What did you make of the fact that Trump just he just brushed it off, that he didn't tell the Chinese to stop buying Russian energy, explaining that it was very important to them, and the difference between that response to the India response? I think I might be going to India in a few weeks' time. How come India rolled over?
I'm not sure that everyone has rolled over at all. Really China dominated the trade talks, completely dominated. They're unassailable in terms of rare earths. Yes, you know, over the years, they can, America can say they persuaded people to sell rare earth. It's not that. It's the refining and also the machinery to extract it. China has a complete domination. 93% of refining capacity is in China. I mean, you can dig out some ore, but it's not usable in that way. So they had a complete domination. My understanding from the Chinese account of the meeting was that, in fact, although he sort of prefaced it and said he was going to, he didn't even ask the Chinese to stop and buying Russian oil. It wasn't raised during the talks. In any way, we know what the Russians said to him before. I mean, the Chinese said to him before. The Chinese said, listen, Mr. Trump, our trade relations with other than the United States is just none of your business.
And put that into the context of what you said earlier about the casino oligarch widow Miriam Adelson. We invite her on the program. She was smiling at the Knesset in the Middle East, a couple of hundred miles away from the genocide the other day. Is it important, the marriage between the neocons who want to destroy Russia as a country and the Zionists who want to destroy countries for a greater Israel in this region, going as far as, Saudi Arabia and Iraq as part of the original greater Israel plan. These two fit together to occupy Russia and Ukraine so it can't help in any war that may start with Iran.
They both share one common element, one common one, which is that they need the United States to remain military hegemon, because there's only America that can, if you like, Israel can only be sustained if America is a military hegemon. They understand that completely. But then there are differences of nuance. For the banking, the old Rothschild, Rockefeller sort of alliance of donors goes back a long way. They also, as I said to you, they focus more on the trade and the economic issues. And there they're concerned about AI and that the Chinese shouldn't prick the bubble of their AI project. And they want collateral for their banking system. Whereas the others are mostly concerned about power. And they are concerned about power and that Israel is the source and their base of power in the United States. Through Israel, they control Congress. In Israel, they control much of the financial system. Through Israel, they control the media. So that is the sort of source of their strength and their power. So they're not prepared to let that slip away. And the others, the financially orientated ones, really still hope that somehow or other they can get back to the 90s and the Yeltsin era, where, you know, the Davos boys can go in and buy up the rest of Russia on the cheap in dollars thrown in for the purpose.
Well, actually, rather than a possible Yeltsin proxy being elected in Moscow, is Trump arguably the Yeltsin figure? You seem to be turning him into a complete lame duck already. We're still 1 year away from the midterms. I know that Mr. Soros' son's friend, Mahmoud Mamdani, his father came on this show, friend of the show, won in New York. Is he already a lame duck, 1 year from the midterms when presumably his power will drain away?
It could be. It could be. I mean, it's too early to predict. But how the Supreme Court decides will be one very important element in this process. But the other thing is that there are lots of ill feelings about what's been happening in Gaza. I mean, real hostility. And there is a breach between his MAGA base, which he sees and particularly triggered by the killing of Charlie Kirk, and they view that the response that's come from the FBI is another cover-up. And they blame Trump for this. And so there's a lot of ill feeling there.
Sorry to interrupt, Alistair, but we're coming. We're just about to come to an end. But just finally, what do you think of Monday's scheduled meeting between the Al Qaeda commander Jalani and Trump in the White House, and what the MAGA movement that you speak of there are going to think if Charlie Kirk was alive watching this ceremony?
I think he'd be disgusted by it, as most of us are. We know the history of these people; they're chameleons. These jihadists, they are perfectly capable of hiding their true intent and their feelings for Europe. I mean, as you know, I've known them really quite intimately. I knew Bin Laden. I met Bin Laden years ago, and I was in Afghanistan during that period. Extremely dangerous. And of course, it's obvious we all knew that they were both paying them and in touch with the jihadists for years in Syria before that, with Jalani, incidentally, through USAID providing funding to them. Ambassador Jeffries has said, yes, we were, talking to him and having funding for years.
Alistair Crook, thank you. That's it for the show. We'll be back on Monday with a surgeon who has returned from the killing fields of the US-UK-EU-backed Gaza genocide, whose survivors we offer our condolences. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Monday.